Well, how ready are you to launch a business? Can you launch a business with a single product? I know many people I talk to say, I've got so many great ideas. And turns out tonight, Shapeshifter launched off a single great idea. And that was making the world's most perfect brownie. Eric Lambeskachty is the director, co-owner at Yummy Chef. Is the brownie the genesis of the yummy? Eric?
Hi, Bruce. Good evening. Well, yes, definitely. It all started with a brownie. But firstly, I would just like to introduce, Shapeshifters. It's actually a plural. My business partner is here as well tonight.
Yeah, unfortunately, Eric, I mean, I can't see you guys. So I'm chatting to you, and you and I are going to chat. My producers have chatted to you about this, and we're going to talk because otherwise it gets a bit messy and a bit confusing. Okay, so everybody's back in their baking box. Tell me about the brownies.
Okay, so yeah, the brownie started back in 2008, basically. I was still at school. And it all started just of a little TV show that I was watching, and I was studying for my last exam. And basically ran to the kitchen with interest, never really baked before, and started baking. And I baked and I baked and thought that I was really enjoying this. And one of the products that I made that day was a brownie. And, you know, my mother came home that evening and opened the fridge, and she was just quiet. And she looked at me and she said, made the joke to say, listen, you're going to have to start selling. We won't finish all of this. And that's basically where it started.
What age were you then?
I was 18. So,
okay.
Yes. And
what was your life path up until that? I mean, was there a lot of kids at 5 or 6 or 7 helping mum out or dad out in the kitchen? It doesn't matter who you help out. Know that this is going to be the path that they're going to follow. At what point did you know it?
Well, at that stage, I didn't really know it. When I was like around 5 or 6, I used to bake pancakes. My mom used to help me bake pancakes, and I would walk down the road and sell pancakes. And I still remember this one incident where I told this lady I was saving up for a bicycle just so that she would buy 10 packs of pancakes from me. And I think it kind of draws back to then, where I really loved selling. I loved to make something and make people happy. And I think you can draw it back to then. When I finished school in matric, I didn't really know that I had a huge passion for the food industry. And it kind of sparked probably only a year after that, when I took a gap year. And I was running the business, and I would have gone to study architecture and mechanical engineering. And by the end of my gap year, I realized that I love science, and I love the food industry. And we came across this degree called food science. So actually I signed up for it, but on the side I had this business. And and that's when I realized, you know, I had a really big passion and I wanted to make something from this business. And my parents gave me this challenge to pay my own studies with brownies. And I think it's the way that they figured I'll finish my degree as quick as possible, because I have to pay for it. And that I'll keep the business going. So by the time I finish my degree, I'll have a business.
This notion of science, and one of my favorite TV chefs is a British guy called Heston Blumenthal. I get a bit tired of him eventually, but he makes a big theater of the science of food and the balances in food. We normally regard chefs and bakers, people who deal with food, as artists, but the scientific aspect of understanding precisely the chemical reactions of ingredients is pivotal, surely.
Yes, Bruce. I think shortly after I realized that I have a passion for food and I started pursuing this, and I quickly found out about Heston Blumenthal. You know, it's still a dream to go and eat at the Fat Duck, which is his restaurant.
You've got to save. I mean, not only in pound terms is it the world's most expensive mouthful of food, but then you've got a 20 rand to the pound exchange rate. So good luck with that dream. Sorry, carry on.
Yes, surely. We'll still have to sell quite a few brownies to get there. But it's always been a passion. And, you know, in a way, science is an art. And I think if you apply science to the food industry and you do it in the right way, I believe we're doing currently, it opens a lot of doors, it drives a lot of innovation, and it sets you apart from your competition, absolutely.
The importance of food markets in allowing you to test your concepts and allowing you to, you know, go from the art to the science to then the business of developing a sustainable income stream over time using the brownie base. The food markets, the Western Cape has got marvelous slow food markets, and that allowed that, I'm sure, as a testing ground.
No, absolutely. You know, when I sat with all of these things that I made and I started selling at markets, I got this immediate contact with a consumer, with a customer and the consumer. And it was a fantastic way to know exactly what people liked. And that all set up actually led to one of our biggest selling points. So, you know, we supply a lot of coffee shop chains currently, and the products to be frozen and thawed, and you can freeze them again. And that actually, the whole design behind that came from the market days, where, you know, I didn't want to throw away all the stock at the end of my market day, and I had to apply science to get the brownies to a stage where they can do that. And today it proves to be probably our biggest selling point in our company.
You opened your first bakery in 2013, and gave it then the yummy name YUMM with the I at the end of it. Have you ever had a retail facing bakery? Or have you always been the production facility that's baked for others?
Yes. So actually, in 2013, we opened the small bakery. It was only 50 squares in Stellenbosch, and started producing from there. At the time, I was still studying, and from there. I had this dream of opening small patisserie shops. So about three years later, it was actually a year after that. In 2014, in December, we opened a retail store in Canal Walk in Century City. And it's like a brick and mortar patisserie shop. And it's still there. It still does really well. We had this dream to build a big brand in the retail space. And, you know, we just kind of quickly learned that the retail market is not really predictable.
And it's so hard, especially when you're dealing with fresh and you're dealing with delicate morsels of joy and happiness, to be consistent and then to create a business that you could grow and franchise. I mean, I'd love a perfect home feel bakery on every corner, but you know, even the Paul concept, which famous brands have brought into South Africa, the French concept, these things are hard to replicate and roll out quickly.
Yeah, exactly. It is. It's quite expensive to roll out as well. So, being a small company, your biggest challenge is capital. And to open one of those stores, I mean, a coffee machine sets you back about $100,000, and then you just have a coffee machine. You don't have a table to put it on, even.
You know, you don't have the table. You don't have the barista. You don't have the beans. You can't differentiate on whatever blend you're going to bring to your customers. I mean, that's where the work begins.
Exactly. So, you know, this was a big dream, and about 1 year or two years down the line with the store, I kind of realized that the strategy had to change. We had to get a consistent cash flow of the business just to fund these brick and mortar stores. And that's kind of when we started thinking out the box. And just about 2 years in 2016, after we opened Canal Walk, we started chasing business.
But you now are serving some 300 retail stores nationally. You doing that from one production facility in Cape Town? Well, in Stellenbosch?
Yes. So in 2016, you know, I sat back and re-strategized. And I thought, you know, if you can do business with retailers on a large scale, you know, you don't have to open a lot of stores, but you get good volume. So I have to say that's like our biggest customer gave us a gap in 2016, Checkers, and they've got a really good drive for a fresh model and artisanal products. And they gave us a chance. And they said, listen, here's a few products that you can manufacture for us. And we started manufacturing for them. And they gave us a chance as a small company to build it up. In that same breath, as soon as we started producing on a large scale, I quickly realized that, you know, this was a different animal on its own.
And does this satisfy a need? I mean, and I don't mean the use of the word horribly, but this desire for ego. You wanted your own business. You wanted to be seen to be doing stuff. You wanted to be mine host and have the cute little bakery. Now you're doing sort of fairly mass production and your name's nowhere near it. Sure, you're making the money and you're getting it all in. Does it satisfy your desire for fame and glory?
No, I wouldn't say I've got a desire for fame and glory. I think, you know, when I employed four people back in 2014-13, when I opened my first bakery in Stellenbosch, I immediately realized what an awesome thing it is to give someone an opportunity to earn an income. And I think that's kind of what started driving me. I thought, how can we create more income for people? And, you know, how can we grow this business even further? But in 2016, when we started manufacturing, I was struggling. And, you know, for a food scientist and a foodie, understanding business was not that easy. And that's just when Frank and I met each other at exactly the right time. And, you know, he's got the financial background. He studied accounting and supply chain, and he's an absolute genius when it comes to that. So we decided let's put our you know, our specialities together.
And at that point, we're going to leave it. Eric Labuschagne, thanks so much for coming in. Eric Labuschagne is the co-owner of Yummy Chef. This is a guy who's built a business from scratch without a business background, but has found a partner. And if you want to understand the power of partnerships and why partnerships are important, Solutions Thinking podcast this week. I'm going to pay you an extract tomorrow of Paul Harris, G.T. Pereira, and Laurie Dippenaar. Now that is a business partnership. But business partnerships, Pavlos has described this recently as well, the importance of getting those partnerships. Absolutely critical. The fascinating insight into how you can start a small business off the back of a single product. And today, 4 or 5 years later, they're employing 20 people. If more of us did that, we'd have a far less of an employment problem. Featuring another business that started with a single idea, the idea that you could fix people's phone screens. A guy called Alex Faree joined me a couple, 3 years ago now, the guy who started iFix and rebranded to WeFix. And I thought it would be a good idea. Single business ideas, single ideas, turning those to money. Alex Faree.
Hello, Bruce. No, we actually didn't run into branding problems. It was a natural progression for us. When I started the business 8 years ago, I was fixing things, mostly iThings. And, you know, since then we've grown from one or two stores in Cape Town to 30 stores. We've done 500,000 repairs and... yeah, we've launched a bunch of brands under us. And, the eye was starting to feel a bit small. So, yeah, we decided, you obviously think long and hard before you change a brand. And we just decided that the WeFix is more inclusive. It reflects our company culture. And it's more open. So, yeah.
We're not just fixing iPhones.
There we go.
A Samsung screen is just as fragile. I mean, we all know the feeling as you get out of your car and you don't have a proper grip on your phone and it slips out of your hand and everything goes into slow motion. And your phone tumbles through space. And then as it hits the ground, everything returns to normal speed and the screen shatters into shards. And you're 1 month into the cell phone contract, you didn't take out the insurance, and you just think, that was a stupid thing to forget. You don't regret not taking the insurance unless you need it. So the idea, actually, for the iFix, which is now the WeFix, started as a result of you having a similar experience with an iPod.
That's correct. I started the business out of my dorm room. I'd had an iPod at the day and there was like music on it that I couldn't lose. And it also fell out of my hand. I took it to a service center. They said throw it away. And I was like, well, I can't lose this music. So went online, went on eBay, went on YouTube, watched a video and fixed it. And then a chummy of mine broke and I fixed his. And then another chummy broke and I fixed his. And it sort of escalated from there. Yeah.
Okay, so like most things, necessity is the mother of invention.
Correct.
Are you naturally useful with your hands, though?
Ironically, no. So, I mean, I've been an entrepreneur my whole life. So before I started, iFix at the time, I'd started several other companies. We launched a business in 2006 that was the first music download platform. Then it was my first year at Varsity. So I've always been like, I enjoy business. I enjoy creating things. I enjoy creating opportunities. And, I believe that do it yourself, but then get somebody that's way better than you doing it. Yeah.
You were educated in Stellenbosch. What did you study?
I studied business, investment management, I think, at the time. Yeah, I didn't.
It stuck, right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm not a big believer of tertiary education. I believe go out and sort of learn in the world. And
did you graduate? Have you got a degree?
I did. My dad forced me, though. He was like, yeah, you're going to finish this. I was like, ah, damn it. Okay, cool. I'll finish it. And, I think I still use one Excel skill from those days. There's no experience. Well, there's no other school than actually just going out and doing it.
The School of Hard Knocks, and that says Alex Faree, the founder of iFix and then WeFix, another Stellenbosch startup. The stuff that happens in the water of Stellenbosch, it needs to be bottled, it needs to be sold, and people need to be motivated like these guys who, as students in Stellenbosch, find ways to start businesses. The bakery business, of course, on the back of a brownie, and then the WeFix business on the back of a cracked iPod screen. The businesses that people get into are not always the lifelong dreams, the lifelong ambitions. They're simply great ideas that people develop and execute. Inspiring stories this evening on Shapeshifters.